Well, this is our last topic on our series, James and the Sermon on the Mount, combined, compared. Next week, we're going to do a kind of a capstone to remind us where we've been in this series, but this is the last topic. And today, we're going to talk about worthless treasure. And it's because both James in his epistle and Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount talk about worthless treasure. It's a really big deal and very unique in Scripture. And so we want to see these two passages side by side. Let's talk about monopoly money. Normally, monopoly money has no real value, but it certainly had value to Parker Brothers, because in 1936, when they introduced the game, they sold 1.8 million copies at $2 each, and they have sold a million copies per year every year since then, and much more. Before Monopoly came along, Parker Brothers, you know, the manufacturer, was considering bankruptcy. But Monopoly was so successful that it changed all of that, and they didn't have to consider bankruptcy anymore. Hasbro purchased Parker Brothers, the entire company, in 1991, and they paid $516 million for it. And a lot of that was because of the Monopoly game. And in 2013, Monopoly all by itself brought in $400 million. And so certainly it had value then, right? And one guy who's actually a game historian and author about the game Monopoly, he says, "We used to boast at Parker Brothers that we had sold 80 million Monopoly games. That number today is probably approaching or over 300 million Monopoly games." So, in other words, Monopoly money is not valuable, but it was kind of valuable when they sold it as a game, right? James 5 sounds like this, talking about money and treasure. It says, "Come now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is corroded and the rust of them shall be a witness against you and shall eat your flesh as if it were fire. You've heaped together treasure for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have harvested your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, it cries. And the cries of those who have harvested have entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." Sabaoth means armies. "You have lived in pleasure on the earth and been unrestrained. You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter." In other words, you fatten the cattle just before you kill them. That's what's happening. You are fattening yourselves before the day of slaughter, the day of judgment. When Jesus was talking about treasures, he uses some of the same language. He said, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moths and rust corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moths nor rust corrupt and where thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So here you see the same sort of language. There are moths, there is rust, there is corrosion, corruption. Same thing in the Sermon on the Mount and in the Epistle of James. Today we want to talk about the natural temporariness of all earthly wealth. It is naturally temporary. And then we want to talk about exchanging, because it can be done. Exchanging earthly wealth for heavenly reward. It can be done, and we want to make sure we know how to do that, and in fact, do that indeed. All right, so we started with this. All earthly treasure is naturally temporary. That's just the way earthly treasure is. So again, Jesus says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moths and rust corrupt and where thieves break through and steal." It's not because it was bad money, not because it was illegally gotten gain. It's just all money. All human wealth in this world is temporary. It comes and goes. If you have clothing that you like very much, it's eventually going to be turned into junk. If you have a car that you like very much, it's eventually going to go to the junkyard and get smashed to bits. That's just the way earthly wealth is. And so Jesus is saying, there's nothing you can do about this. Earthly wealth is temporary. So instead, you ought to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths are not in existence and where rust never happens and where thieves just never do come around. For there, if your treasure is there, that'll be permanent and your heart will follow your treasure. Now, all money, no matter what you do, all wealth is temporary. There's nothing you can do about that. But some wealth is actually filthy. And we have the term in English idiom, filthy lucre. And you see the word lucrative in lucre. It's filthy money. It was lucrative, but it's not honest. And so in Greek, the idea is shameful gain. Shameful gain. And this is James's focus. So James and the Sermon on the Mount are similar here, but James is especially focusing on shameful gain. This is not good, the way you have gotten this money. That's what James says. So again, notice what it says. Come now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Because in certain regimes, the only realistic way for a person to be rich is to be dishonest. And that was so often the case for the Jewish people in the first century. It would be very difficult for them to be rich without compromising their spiritual values, because the Roman government did not particularly like Jewish people. And so if the Jewish people became rich, there might have been some ethical compromise to make that happen. Not in every case, but so often. So James says, come now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Remember in the Sermon on the Mount, don't lay up treasures here where moth will eat them away. Your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is corroded, and the rust, where moth and rust doth corrupt. See, moth and rust, same as Sermon on the Mount. And the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as if it were fire. You've heaped together treasure for the last days. So yeah, you have a lot of stuff, but the last days are coming, and you're not prepared for that. So finally, behold, the hire of the laborers, these people were supposed to get paid for harvesting your fields, and you have not paid them, or you have not paid them what they're worth. And now their cries enter into the ears of the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies, and he's angry with you, and you have fattened yourself for a slaughter, is what happens here, and the day of judgment is coming. So you see, James is saying, sure, all wealth is temporary, but some wealth is filthy. This is shameful gain. You should not have gotten your money this way. So that is especially appropriate when we talk about certain kinds of wealth. So in 1 Timothy 3, for example, when we're talking about church leaders, bishops are overseers of the church. We normally call them pastors today. The text says, a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, that means watchful, sober, also watchful, but also has alcohol intended. Of good behavior, given to hospitality, able to teach, not given to wine, not a striker, he doesn't hit people, and not greedy of shameful gain. Like, make sure that all the money you have is gotten honestly. And if you're greedy of shameful gain, you cannot be a church leader. Same thing in Titus 1:7. A bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not soon angry, not given to wine, not a striker, he doesn't hit people, and not given to shameful gain. Same thing. Some money is filthy. Not all money is filthy. All money is temporary. But not all money is filthy. Some money is filthy. It's shamefully gained. One more time in Titus 1:10. For there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert, who undermine whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for shameful gain's sake. Now, they're not stealing, but they are misrepresenting the Lord, and people are giving them money for telling lies. So it's shameful gain. And once again, not all wealth is filthy. All wealth is temporary. Not all wealth is filthy, but some wealth is shameful. It's filthy. One more time, 1 Peter 5:2. Feed the flock of God, again to church leaders, feed the flock of God which is among you, taking oversight thereof, not by constraint, not because you have to, but willingly, I'm glad to, not for shameful gain, but of a ready mind. Say, I'm not doing this, I'm not in the gospel for money. I didn't do this so that I would get money. I just want to take care of everybody. So there is filthy lucre, there is filthy money, but not all money is filthy, but all money is temporary. Well, filthy money, according to James, is very bad because it burns your soul and it becomes a witness in God's court against the way you've lived. So this is not a small deal in God's eyes. You want to make sure that all of your money is clean and not filthy. Again, Your gold and silver is corroded, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you. In God's courtroom, if you have gotten gain, if you've gotten your wealth in a shameful way, that is going to be evidence against you. This is going to be a court document. Look at what he had, and it was gotten shamefully. You don't want that to happen. And James says that's what will happen. Your wealth gotten shamefully is going to witness against you someday and will eat your flesh as if it were a fire. In other words, this is going to be a judgment against you. You're going to hate this. This is going to be bad. And so you don't want filthy money. Never compromise. But again, setting that aside, not all money is filthy, but all money is temporary. And this is what Jesus focused on. So James was focusing on the filthy money. Jesus is just focusing on normal money, but it's still temporary. So again, Matthew 7:19, do not do this. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, because that's going to be temporary. The moths and the rust are going to ruin everything. So instead, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where there aren't moths, there will not be rust, and there will not be thieves. That is a much better arrangement. And so Jesus' focus is on the temporariness of all wealth. This is such an important thing to grasp. Once you get this, everything changes. You realize that you never own anything again. We have a neighbor that has a little sign in her front yard, and it says something like such and such a person's cottage. And it's a cute little sign, but every time I look at it, it's kind of sad to me, because I know that that house is being rented out to people who probably don't even know who this lady is. So it might be her sign, and it might be, you know, once upon a time her cottage, and maybe it is still her estate, but she doesn't live there. She's too elderly, or maybe she doesn't even live with us anymore in this world. And it says it's her cottage. Well, it's not her cottage. She's gone. You can say that this is going to be, you know, the Biltmore estate or whatever you want to say. But the guy who started that isn't there anymore. It's all temporary. And once you get that everything I ever touch is temporary, then in a way you never own anything again. You realize, okay, this is mine to borrow. But we are all only borrowers. Nobody is an owner. We borrow it for a little while and then it goes away. And that is the reality. Everything we have is actually like monopoly money. And it's not really very valuable. Ed Wynn was a 1930s comedian. And he said, I have no ambition to be the richest man in the cemetery. And that's where this is ending, right? Say, I am filthy rich. Yeah, in a few years you're going to be dead. And there's no wealthy person in the cemetery, right? So it's all temporary. That's what Jesus is saying. You can't help it. It's the nature of earthly wealth to be temporary. And it's all going to go away. It is a lot like monopoly money in that way. Now, what's really interesting is monopoly money is for a game, right? And while you're playing the game, which I never play, but I have played, and you feel exhilarated when you're winning, look how much monopoly money I have, and you feel a little blue when you're losing, oh, I'm a loser, I have no monopoly money. But the game is going to be over in a few minutes. Not few enough as far as I'm concerned, but never mind. The game is going to be over in a few minutes, and it doesn't matter. That's planet Earth. Look how much money I have in the bank. It's exhilarating. Or, oh, look how little money I have in the bank. I'm feeling a little down. But the game is going to be over in a few minutes, and it really doesn't matter. Now, what's weird is that there is a way, not very many ways, there are ways that you could exchange your earthly monopoly money into real treasure, like heavenly reward. Now, there aren't many ways to do this, but there are some ways to do it. This is what Jesus wanted us to do. Trade your Monopoly money. You know you have Monopoly money, right? Figuratively speaking. Jesus wants you to trade it. So this is what he said. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, but do lay up for yourselves treasures, Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but do lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And then you have real treasure, like forever. And you can do this. Like, oh, how, pray tell, could one do this? Well, normally Monopoly money has no value. You know, the dollars that we have in our wallets and purses, more importantly, in our digital transactions. The money that we have isn't really going to have any value very soon. But it could be parlayed into something with value. So the makers of Monopoly did pretty well, right? Like if you happen to be the guy who profits from making Monopoly games in a factory somewhere, then you are getting something real from Monopoly. And there are a few ways you can do that. Like this guy on eBay, isn't this ironic? He is selling Monopoly money. And so you can buy a stack because your Monopoly money got ruined, right? And you want more. Or you're going to use it for some other purpose, a game you're playing with your students at school or whatever. So he is selling fake money for $12.37. Like, hey, so you mean Monopoly money, which has no value, could be parlayed into real U.S. dollars? Oh, now that's interesting, isn't it? And it can be. And here's how you do it in the Lord's work. You see U.S. dollars on the left-hand side. And Jesus said, now, don't you just worry about those U.S. dollars. What you can do instead is invest those and get real treasure from them. So you invest your U.S. dollars into things that are going to yield heavenly rewards. So, for example, you take your U.S. dollars and you live without burdening others. See, if you love somebody, you don't require somebody to feed you and take care of you because you love them. So you want to be independent in the sense that you're not burdening anybody. Now, if you don't love them, then you're like the baby bird and you open your mouth wide and say, drop food in my craw because it's your obligation. Well, you wouldn't be loving them then. You'd be loving yourself. Because you're requiring them to take care of you. So if you wanted to take U.S. dollars and change them into eternal reward, you could make sure that you're not a burden to anybody else. You take care of your own things. And not only that, you have some left over to take care of other people. Now, see, that's really something. And not only that, you would take your U.S. dollars and you would use those dollars to live, survive, and perhaps to lengthen your life. You know what's so strange is that if you make fewer dollars, this is true. A few years back, a news article in Miami described two neighborhoods in Miami, the Miami area, and if you were to take the train, you could go back and forth between these two neighborhoods in just a few minutes. And in one neighborhood, the people only live to be 70 years old. And in the other neighborhood, they live to be 80 years old. You know what the difference was? The 70-year-old neighborhood, those people were on welfare, and they didn't have very good medical care, and they didn't eat very well, and they didn't live very long. The other neighborhood, these people were a little bit affluent, and they ate better food, and they had better health care, and they lived longer. And you could get back and forth between these two neighborhoods in just a few minutes on the same train. Isn't that something? So you could take your American dollars, and you could survive, and you could even take care of yourself in such a way that you could serve the Lord for 80 years instead of 70 years. Wouldn't that be something? Say, Lord, I'm going to gift you another 10 years of service by spending my American dollars in these ways instead of those ways. So I'm not going to be a burden to anyone. I'm going to support myself, and I'm going to try to live and give you 10 extra years. Isn't that something? You could also take your American dollars and you could put them into nurturing your family with loyalty. Say, well, that's a no-brainer. Everybody does that. No, everybody doesn't do that, right? We live in a time where families are splitting, disintegrating, and there's no loyalty at all. But you could take those dollars and you could put them into your family and nurture your family loyally, which, by the way, is what the Lord obligates you to do. And if you do that, He is going to count you as a faithful Christian. You could also take your U.S. dollars and put that into encouraging people to come to the Lord if they're seeking, and encouraging other people to carry out the gospel wherever they are. And you use your U.S. dollars to draw people to the gospel. Now, if you do that, you're going to get rewards in heaven. You could take your monopoly money, your U.S. dollars, which really don't have any value, in just a few minutes when the game's over. But you could parlay that into reaching people with the gospel. And that never ends. That's forever. And that is eternally rewardable. You've taken your monopoly money and you've translated it into something wonderful. And lastly, at the bottom there, you could take your U.S. dollars, your monopoly money, which is only good for a few more minutes and then the game's over. But you could kind of trick the whole universe here and take your monopoly money and invest it in encouraging the Christian family. Like, I see you're having kind of a hard time here. I would like to help you financially, but it doesn't even have to be financially. You know what you need? You need a good church in your area. Well, I don't have a good church in my area. Oh, well, I am going to support a good church in your area, so you do have a good church in your area. Well, there is a good church in our area, but its doors are about to close because there aren't very many Christians left in the world. Well, what we're going to do then is we're going to take our U.S. We're going to take our monopoly money and we're going to put it in the church offering plate. I'm going to keep that church going. That way you will have an opportunity to understand the things of God and to be helped and taught and supported as a member of the Christian family. And now you've kind of tricked the whole world. You've taken monopoly money, which has no value at all, and in a few minutes when the game is over, it isn't going to make any difference to anyone. You've taken your monopoly money and you've translated it into a heavenly reward. See, isn't that something? And that's really what we're doing with our American money. You know the stories of Brother Andrew, who founded Voice of the Martyrs and smuggled Bibles into the Soviet Union when the Iron Curtain was down. And, thrilling stories about bringing these Bibles to people who weren't allowed to have Bibles. And it got started with a visa to enter Yugoslavia, which, of course, was in the Soviet bloc. And it was hard to get the visa, but he finally did get it. He called his good friend, Mr. Westra, and all of this is happening in Amsterdam. He said, I've got it, Mr. Westra. I'm going behind the Iron Curtain as a missionary. He got permission to enter Yugoslavia, and he knew he was going to bring Bibles and Christian literature. And Mr. Westra said, Andrew, you better come home back to Holland, or maybe it's Belgium, huh? Better come home for your keys to your Volkswagen. He had a brand new 1957 Volkswagen, and Wester was going to use it for his business, and not just everybody in 1957 had a nice, pretty Volkswagen to use. And Brother Andrew didn't have enough money to buy one, and Mr. Wester says, you better come and get my Volkswagen. And he says, Mrs. Wester and I decided months ago that if you got the visa for Yugoslavia, you also got our automobile. So come home and pick up your keys. And Brother Andrew says, well, what about the business? And Mr. Wester says, Andrew, you are on the king's business. We've prayed about it. These are our orders. Come and get your Volkswagen. And then these great stories, he picks up the seats and he loads these gospel literature pieces in the trunk, which is really the hood, and under the seat and everywhere he can put. And he sneaks it into these communist countries where people don't have Bibles and Christian literature. And he could go to jail. Bad things could happen to him. And the Lord is miraculously getting him through these customs places, blinding the eyes of the people who are checking his luggage. Just extraordinary acts of courage for God in his little 1957 Volkswagen. You know what that is? Now, the Volkswagen is really just a monopoly piece. It has no real value when the game is over, and the game is going to be over so soon, right? And all of us have these little monopoly pieces. I chose the Corvette, the Range Rover, the Sprinter camper van. I thought that was nice. And a Ford F-150 pickup truck just to put in there because everybody needs a truck, right? Well, these are monopoly pieces. What is it really worth? Well, when the game's over, nothing. And the game's going to be over so soon. However, this guy on eBay is selling one of the original pewter little cars that are used in the Monopoly game. And he hopes to derive $6.99 for his car. Like, oh, I get it. So it's not really worth anything. While I'm playing the game, you know, I kind of win the game. And then we put it in a box and we put it in a closet. And that's it for another 5 years. But it could. You could take that and turn it into real money. Oh, that's interesting. You could probably buy Monopoly games at yard sales for $1. And then you could sell that little car out of it for $6. And maybe get a stack of money and sell that for $13. Then I would take something that has no value and I would parlay that into real American dollars. That's how you do it. Or in real life, you could take your wealth, your monopoly money, and your possessions. You could say, you know, I'm going to downsize a little bit here, and I'm going to take that little pewter car that I have parked in my garage, and I am going to translate that into real money like Mr. Westra did. Now when the game is over, it's not over. I got real treasure. You see how clever that could be. You know, the miracle on 34th Street? In 1947, the top house, that's the one that Susan Walker was so desperate to have. Today I look at that and say, meh. I mean, it's architecturally pleasing. I think it's very handsome. I would be perfectly, perfectly happy to live in that house. But I would not have normally said, yeah, oh yeah, that's my dream house. But that's the way things were in 1947. Now we blow that out of the water, right? So the 1994 remake, that shows a big house. They're like, yeah, that's quite a house right there. That's a big one. I get it. But really, both of them are the same. On the bottom right-hand corner, you have a Monopoly house. And that's all either one of those are going to be when the game's over. And the game is going to be over so soon. So none of it really matters. Unless you are able to parlay that into real treasure. You see, because everything we have, all the money that goes through our fingers, is really just like Monopoly money. So you say, why don't all people everywhere parlay their earthly Monopoly money into heavenly reward? Well, we all just do this. And Jesus explains that. He says, truly, it is hard for a rich man in Monopoly money to enter the kingdom of heaven. Like, I'm winning the game. I don't want to stop the game. I like this game. But he's only got Monopoly money. Mark 4:18. And these seeds, which are sown among thorns, are like people who hear the word. And the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of Monopoly money, the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust of other things choke the word. I would have gotten real treasure, but I was loving the game. You know, I had a lot of Monopoly money, and I had hotels, and I had the railroad. I mean, so I just didn't think about the word because of the deceitfulness of Monopoly. In Luke 12:15, he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness. That's the love of Monopoly money. I just love my Monopoly money. I love this game. But be careful, because a man's life does not consist in the abundance of Monopoly things that he possesses. It all goes away. 1 Timothy 6:9, but those that are determined to be rich in Monopoly money, I'm determined, Well, they'll fall into temptation, a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. Because it's the love of monopoly money that is the root of all evil. Yeah, but I'm in the game. I just love this game. I'm winning. Yeah, but it ruins your life. Don't love monopoly money. Colossians 3:5, put to death, therefore, covetousness, which is the love of monopoly money. I just love monopoly money. You have to put that away because that is actually idolatry. But I love the game. I'm killing it. I'm crushing it. I'm winning. Actually, that's idolatry. What can monopoly money prove? 2 Corinthians 8:8, I do not speak by commandment, by occasion of the eagerness of others. Others have been so good at this, and so I'm telling you how you can emulate what they do. And to prove the sincerity of your love, you're given the monopoly money for a few minutes, and then the game's over. But while you have it, you could parlay that into real money, and that would show that you really do love God and the people of God. Same thing, different verse. Therefore, show them, and before the churches, the proof of your love. Take your monopoly money and do something real with it. And then we'll know that you really do love God and His people. 2 Corinthians 8:2, how much money, monopoly money do you have? Like, I don't really have a lot of monopoly money. You know, you might say, I'm really losing this game. I don't have a lot. So how much does it take to parlay that into eternal reward? And it's here in 2 Corinthians 8:2. The abundance of their deep poverty in monopoly money, they didn't have much. The abundance of their deep poverty abounded unto their real riches of generosity. So it doesn't take much monopoly money, figuratively speaking, to really come up with something in eternity. A few years back, a minister was called to the home of one of his best congregants, and the guy was dying. And the guy was very upset because he didn't feel like he lived well. And the pastor told him all the usual things about, you know, we're all falling on the mercy of God and God is merciful and all the usual things. But this man was very distraught. And so the minister listened to the man when he said this. I am going to the judge I'm unprepared to meet. For years I have lived and taught my family to live largely for this world and have denied ourselves nothing, but spent thousands on comforts. When I gave hundreds to Christ and the church, it should have been thousands. My business energy and time and money have been mostly devoted to self-pleasing and gratification. And how can I meet my judge and give an account for my stewardship? The monopoly game is ending for him. And he thought, oh no, I put all my focus on the monopoly game, and now we're going to put the game away, put it in the box, put the box on the shelf, and it's over. And I'm not ready for real life, for what comes next. Worthless treasure. All monopoly money has very temporary value just until the game is over. But there are a few ways, not very many, there are a few ways where it can be used for an exchange, for real treasure. If you decide to exchange your monopoly money for invisible heavenly treasure in order to fund your lifelong dream of serving the Savior well, then in a way, you'll lose the game. Because at the end of the monopoly game, you don't have much money. You sold it on eBay. But after you lose the game, you find out you've won life, real life, everlasting life. And that's the point. Can we stand and be dismissed with prayer? Lord, we ask that you help us all to see what we have, the house, the car, the money. Help us to see it for what it is. It's temporary and it all goes away when the game is over, which is very soon. But I pray you give us the heart and the wisdom to parlay those things into heavenly treasure like your Son appealed to us to do. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.